This is a new day for New York 19.
Where is the good officers at? If 11 of them is no damn good, we want to know where the good ones at.
I believe the goal is beating Donald Trump.
Watch your
tongue. What do you mean? She just called me names.
So I don't give a f- she spoke the truth.
Whoa, look at that. There's a beaver 5 feet from us. Usually they whack their tails on the water and try to scare you off. That was a pretty brave beaver.
We've learned some tough lessons, and those lessons are we have to hold people accountable.
Hey there, it's Ian Pickus, WAMC News Director, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we're listening to two interviews with top political figures in the Northeast. First, we'll hear WAMC Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landes speaking with Massachusetts U.S. Senator Ed Markey. Then, WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley interviews Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York's 21st District. First, a reminder about the WAMC Summer Fund Drive. As I'm saying this, the drive continues over in Pledge Central. Help us keep podcasts like this going with your pledge at WAMC.org. In Congress for more than four decades, Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey will seek a second term next year. The Democrat sat down with Josh Landes in Pittsfield to talk about the 2020 election, abortion rights, impeachment, and Robert Mueller's press conference.
The Mueller report concluded that the Russians had tried intensively to interfere with our election in 2016. Number two, that it was impossible for Mueller to say that President Trump did not commit a crime. And number three, that Mueller said that Congress is a recourse because he, as an employee of the Justice Department, is constrained by a policy which says that you cannot indict a sitting president, but that Congress can take action. And so from my perspective, the statement by Mueller is an invitation for Congress to commence hearings, an investigation into whether or not the president did in fact commit crimes in 2016 or its aftermath in his pursuit of the presidency in his relationship with the Russians.
Some of your colleagues in the House and the Senate have called for President Trump to be impeached. Where do you stand on the issue?
My feeling is that first we have to have the comprehensive hearings on the Mueller report itself with Donald McGahn, Hope Hicks, Robert Mueller, and anyone else necessary to get the information which the American people need. That we need an unredacted copy of the Mueller report to be given to key members of the House and the Senate. That the White House should be forced to provide key documents and information that right now they are withholding. And then the Congress should conduct an investigation to determine whether or not the president had committed crimes. And if so, then we should begin an impeachment proceeding.
Staying on the national level, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that he would consider filling a vacancy on the Supreme Court in 2020 should one emerge. This directly contradicts his stance in 2016 concerning the appointment of Merrick Garland during the presidency of Barack Obama. What was your takeaway from Mitch McConnell's remarks?
What Mitch McConnell did to Merrick Garland is a disgrace. What he is now saying about his willingness to confirm a Supreme Court justice in the presidential election year is just rank hypocrisy, given what he did to Merrick Garland. So it's all part of this Republican attempt to completely control the American judiciary and leave that as the legacy of Donald Trump for a generation.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, in the wake of a series of restrictive abortion laws being passed around the country, are you concerned that should the issue come before the Supreme Court today, they might overturn Roe v. Wade?
I'm very concerned about this Supreme Court, as it's presently constituted, dealing with abortion issues. But I think that it would create an emergency in our country in terms of a woman's right to choose if Trump had an opportunity to name two new Supreme Court justices during his second term. I think that would lead to a death knell for Roe versus Wade as we know it. And that is absolutely unacceptable and why it's imperative for Donald Trump to be removed as president in November of 2020.
On the subject of 2020, what are your thoughts on your fellow Senator Elizabeth Warren and her bid for the presidency?
Well, I've endorsed Elizabeth Warren. She's my colleague. She's a great senator. I think she'll be a great president. And I was at her announcement in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and I spoke on her behalf in Lawrence that day. I'm very proud of her, and I think that her candidacy is growing in strength as each day goes by, and she's become someone who has set the substantive parameters of what is being discussed in the Democratic presidential primary, and I'm very proud of her.
What about Elizabeth Warren makes her the right choice for president?
She's very smart and disciplined and idealistic. She has high goals for the country, which we need. She knows how to fight for them. And I think that's what we're going to need to take on Donald Trump in 2020 as we head towards the presidential debates.
You'll be facing an opponent in your bid for a second term in the 2020 Democratic primary here in Massachusetts. What are your thoughts on facing Shannon Liss Reardon in the fall?
Well, I'm going to run a very strong race based upon the principles that I believe in. We need to fight to ensure that no child has to worry about climate change impacting their family or our country. No child has to worry about whether or not their family is going to lose their health care, that no child has to worry that a gunman might come into their school because it was easy to purchase a gun in our country. I'm going to run on the issues that I care deeply about. I've been a change agent throughout my entire career, and I'm going to run on that in 2020.
Looking back over your first term, what are you most proud of, and what highlights do you plan on talking about in your bid for reelection?
Well, at the top of the list is introducing the Green New Deal with Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which has already changed the entire debate in our country on climate change. It's catapulted climate to the top of the list, the most important issues in the presidential race. And the ambition of the Green New Deal is something that I think is absolutely inspiring young people, especially across this country. And it's something that I think is going to be a very powerful thing for Donald Trump to have to deal with. I'm also very proud of the work that I've done on the opioid crisis. I've been able to pass four critical opioid protections that are now the law of the nation, dealing with fentanyl, dealing with Suboxone and medically assisted treatment, setting up a scorecard for how we're going to be dealing with looking at which one of the treatment regimes work across the entirety of the country, focusing on HIV, AIDS, and hepatitis C and its co-infection rate with opioid addiction. All of those are now laws, which I was able to successfully partner with Republicans to put on the books in the last couple of years. So I'm going to continue in that vein for as long as I am in the Senate.
Some have criticized the Green New Deal as being too unrealistic to actually become law. Do you think this can actually make it to the books and become policy?
The Green New Deal is very powerful, and it's tapped into a sense of anger that young people especially have about how this issue has not been dealt with by preceding generations. So I'm very confident that the Green New Deal is the tip of the spear in a movement that is going to see comprehensive changes in the laws of our country at the federal, state, and local level, and it's going to happen a lot sooner than people think.
There's been a lot of conversation about transportation and rail access in Western Massachusetts. Have you been able to have any conversations on the federal level about investing more in the state's infrastructure, specifically the idea of more east-west rail transportation across Massachusetts?
I serve on the Infrastructure Committee, and we're working on two bills. One is a surface transportation bill, which would be about a $300 billion transportation bill, which we could use out here in Western Mass. And we hope to be able to get that done this year, fingers crossed. And then there's a larger infrastructure bill, which Donald Trump says that he wants, which would be $2 trillion, which would include a lot of funding that could be used out here in the Berkshires and other parts of the state for critical transportation issues, including transit.
You've also been on the forefront of another big Berkshire issue, that of getting Massachusetts channels back on the dial for Spectrum customers. What is the status of your efforts to get the cable giant to return Massachusetts programming to Berkshire residents?
I've introduced legislation with Congressman Richie Neal and Elizabeth Warren just last week, which I am going to try to attach to a satellite piece of legislation that will be moving through the Congress in the next few months that will force a negotiation between Charter and the broadcasters to resolve the issues so that the people who live in the Berkshires have access to the local news, weather, and sports of Channel 22 in Springfield, so that at 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock at night, they can turn on their own cable system and be able to see what Massachusetts sports and politics are all about, and not New York.
When you look at Massachusetts right now, what do you see as the most critical issues facing your constituents?
At the top of the list is blocking further cuts in healthcare or NIH funding. We are the leading state of the United States in medical research and in our medical system. And Trump and his allies in Congress have tried to slash funding. We have to additionally continue to focus on net neutrality and the openness of the architecture of the internet so that smaller companies can be created all across our state, but especially out here in the Berkshires. We also have to push a Green New Deal so that the wind and solar and battery jobs are incentivized out here, because there's thousands of new jobs that will in fact be created for blue collar workers if the Green New Deal is implemented. So I could go down on these issues, but at the heart of it is we have to continue to try to democratize access to opportunity through education, through healthcare, through job training, and opening up our economy so that everyone is able to prosper.
Speaking of the economy, what was your reaction to President Trump's announcement this week that he would impose new tariffs on Mexico in response to illegal immigration?
The president's announcement of imposing a 5% across-the-board tariff on all Mexican goods is just part of his blunderbuss trade strategy that has no purpose, no end to it, other than the fact that he can do it. He should be trying his best to negotiate a comprehensive immigration bill within our own country that would significantly staunch the flow of immigration, you know, across our borders. But he is just unwilling to sit down and work with the Democrats to accomplish that comprehensive approach to the issue of immigration.
You're also working on legislation concerning robocalls. Tell me about that. What efforts are you making to combat robocalls across the country?
Robocalls are a bipartisan menace. There are no red robocalls or blue robocalls. There are just irritating, harassing robocalls. So that's why I'm working together with Senator John Thune of South Dakota, who is the Republican whip, the second most powerful Republican in the Senate. And our bill just passed 98-1 on the Senate floor last week. And we're very hopeful that the same thing will happen in the House and that we'll be able to put a good bill on the president's desk so that we can begin to dramatically alter the course of the relationship which all Americans have with their phones, whether it's on their kitchen table or in their pocket or pocketbook. Okay? It just has to end.
At a time where politics couldn't seem more contentious, what's it like on the ground in D.C., working with your colleagues across the aisle? Is there a sense of tension there, or do you still find ways to work on things together?
Well, I try to find areas of agreement with my Republican colleagues, whether it be on robocalls or opioids or even a comprehensive bill, which I was able to pass in December of 2018 with Senator Cory Gardner for $7 to $8 billion to deal with something called the Asia Reassurance Initiative, so that we had funding that could be used by our government to assure countries in Asia that they didn't have to cozy up to China unnecessarily. So that's how I try to operate. Where I can find agreement with Republicans, I do, and I'm able to pass legislation. Opioids, China, robocalls, they're all going to be laws. But where we have to fight, where they're trying to undermine a woman's right to choose, our environment, our educational funding for poor children in our country, I'm going to fight as hard as I can for the people of Massachusetts and our country.
That's Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey speaking with WAMC's Josh Landes. The North Country Chamber of Commerce recently hosted a Quebec-New York Aerospace Transportation Equipment Rendezvous in Plattsburgh. The event brought together representatives from industry and government, including New York Representative Elise Stefanik. The Republican co-chair of the Congressional Northern Border Caucus was one of the keynote speakers. The 21st District Representative spoke with WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley about a number of issues, including her reaction to Robert Mueller's latest comments.
Well, I was listening to Mueller's press conference as I was traveling to Clayton for a tour of the St. Lawrence River. I think Mueller focused on the findings of the Mueller report, which I have read, and I've been supportive of making that as transparent as possible to the American public. And I think his focus specifically on ensuring that every American understands the systemic efforts from Russia to undermine our elections in 2016 is an incredibly serious matter, and we need to make sure that we're putting policies in place, whether it's investing in cybersecurity, whether it's making sure states have the resources they need to make sure their elections are safe and secure, or whether it's closing loopholes related to the FEC. I've been a leader on a number of legislative proposals. One I'd like to highlight is the Honest Ads Act. For example, when you see political ads on TV or radio, there's usually a disclosure of it's required, who pays for it. We need to make sure that that's required on digital ads as well, because Russia was able to use digital ad efforts to target and spread misinformation leading up to the 2016 elections.
It's still possible to obfuscate that regardless.
Well, we need to make sure the Honest Ads Act passes in the House and the Senate. We also need to make sure that no foreign dollars are allowed to be spent when it comes to political campaigns and elections in this country. That's another bill I'm working on a bipartisan basis. So I think Bob Mueller, I've been supportive of his report from the beginning, and I was pleased to see that it was made public so quickly. I was pleased to see that there was no executive privilege asserted by the administration. And I think we need to focus on the work ahead of us on the House Armed Services Committee and the House Intelligence Committee to make sure that we have strengthened cybersecurity efforts and we don't allow Russia to undermine our elections in the future.
When his report came out, the rumblings of impeachment started coming back again, and they've peaked again with his comments this week. Should impeachment be on the table?
No, I do not support impeaching the president. This is an issue that Speaker Pelosi is going to have to deal with in her own caucus. There are a number of Democrats who have come out in support of it, but many Democrats have not. Again, my focus is on legislative solutions that are bipartisan to strengthen our election security going into 2020. I do not support impeaching the president.
Amash has said, and he's a fellow Republican, that impeachment should be on the table. Why not?
I disagree with my colleague Justin Amash. He, you know, is an independent voice. He is more libertarian. He frequently does not vote with Republicans in the House. So I disagree with his statements.
Do you think that Russia was involved in helping President Trump become elected? I mean, you've talked about making sure they don't interfere with future elections, but do you think they did interfere in the election where Trump was elected?
The American people elected President Trump. And I think that's important for both parties to recognize and elected officials from both parties to recognize. When it comes to Russia meddling, I agree and support the findings of the report that Russia did try to sow discord in our 2016 elections. And we are not the only country that Russia has tried to do this. They have had systemic efforts, particularly if you look at Eastern European countries, in trying to sow discord. So we need to make sure that we are not only working in the U.S., but with our NATO allies to harden our security measures when it comes to our elections.
In Canada this week, they are taking a very hard look at social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter. Should there be restrictions placed on the social media platforms?
I think the social media platforms have a significant part to play in this. We had the technology companies testify in an open hearing on the Intelligence Committee about the investments they're making when it comes to their security practices, how they approve political ads, and they have made robust investments in that space. There are still significant questions that I think we need to ask those tech companies to make sure that they are doing enough. So I support making sure that we hold the tech companies accountable and they're making those investments and understand the importance of election security.
As we look towards the 2020 election, once again, very early on, you have already a challenger. What do you make of challengers stepping up so early in the process, not just in your campaign, but across many other districts and states?
I'm looking forward to the 2020 elections. I was proud to win by the largest margin in the entire Northeast of any Republican in 2018. That was a tough election cycle for all House Republicans, and I think the outcome in this district really speaks for itself. We won by significant double digits. We're in a very strong position going into 2020. I'm looking forward to once again talking about the differences. I'm focused on results. My far-left opponent is focused on resistance. She opposes everything the president does. She is for raising taxes. She is for banning guns. I have a strong record of being an independent voice for this district, and I look forward to continuing to do my job like I am today in terms of highlighting issues that are important to constituents and businesses that I represent.
Some people have a negative view of what is going on down in Washington. Are you worried that that will impact your campaign as an incumbent?
Well, you know, I get frustrated with what's going on in Washington. I think every American's pretty frustrated, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, about what's going on in Washington. What I'm very proud of is I'm in the top 10% most bipartisan members of Congress, and I have a record of delivering results for my constituents, whether it's being the key voice for Fort Drum, whether it's advocating on U.S.-Canadian issues, northern border issues, focusing on representing farmers and helping pass the Farm Bill, which passed after the last election, and that was a big victory for our region. So I'm proud of my record, and I'm going to run on my strong record in 2020.
Elise Stefanik, you are in Plattsburgh for a new meeting regarding the cross-border relationship, and that's taking a look at the aerospace potential. We've got other transportation manufacturing going on. What do you see as the potential for aerospace development based on especially what's going on in Montreal?
I think there's huge potential for businesses to be attracted to make increased investments in the broader Plattsburgh and Clinton County region. We're seeing examples of that with companies like Norsk Titanium, which is continuing to grow. I was able to host a senior-level Department of Defense delegation to make sure that they understood the capabilities of Norsk Titanium and to try to identify opportunities where Norsk can partner with the Department of Defense. I think similar to what the region has done when it comes to the transportation parts manufacturing sector in partnership with Montreal, we should also be looking, and I know the North Country Chamber is looking at those partnership opportunities when it comes to aerospace. So again, I think you'll see growth when it comes to aerospace jobs and businesses in our region.
The USMCA has not yet been ratified, both by the U.S. and by Canada. You expressed optimism that Congress will ratify it. What about Canada, being the co-chair of the Northern Border Caucus? What do you know about what's going on in Parliament, and how optimistic are you that it will move forward there?
I'm optimistic. You know, as I've had high-level discussions with my Canadian counterparts, they are committed to getting USMCA across the finish line. We are working on it every day in Congress in partnership with my colleagues on the Northern Border Caucus, but also with organizations like the U.S. Chamber. I'm hopeful we can get this done before the August recess. I think one of the key indicators that we're moving in the right direction is the relief when it came to the steel and aluminum tariffs. That means I think we're getting in a much more positive place to get the votes we need to pass USMCA out of the House.
How critical is that, based on your conversations with your Canadian counterparts, for the Canadian Parliament to move it forward?
Oh, it's critical. I think we need to show that Congress is able to get this done. And we are working with manufacturers, with agriculture organizations across the country to make the case and really remind Americans how much of our economy and how much growth potential there is for this modernized NAFTA, where we're fixing parts of NAFTA that were outdated and we're improving NAFTA so that it's more pro-jobs, pro-manufacturing, pro-farmers. So I support the USMCA. I'm part of the team of members who are working to make sure that we have the votes before it's brought to the floor.
And I'd like to clarify, the proposal to move CBP personnel from the northern border to the southern border, that's still on the table, isn't it?
It is still something that the administration has discussed, but I think what is critical is you've seen bipartisan opposition from northern border congressional districts who have talked about the importance of maintaining the staffing levels of CBP officers, particularly as we're heading into a really busy season. We're heading into the summer here, a lot of Canadian tourism, a lot of cross-border traffic, you know, the number of goods that go across the border on a daily basis. We need to make sure that we continue to have the personnel along the northern border.
Now, you led the letter regarding the concerns about that. Have you heard anything back from, you know, sending your letter and expressing your concerns?
My staff has been in touch with the administration. They have heard our concerns. They understand the importance of this region and making sure that we have a positive economic relationship and that we continue to have a strong working relationship with Canadians. But in terms of announcements, I don't have any particular announcement on it.
Have they given you a timeline?
We're still working through that.
Anything coming up over the course of the summer that you plan to work on to introduce in Congress? In the near future?
Well, you know, we are marking up the National Defense Authorization Act at the committee level. That's really important for companies like Norsk Titanium, but also for Fort Drum, for example, in my district, or the Navy Nuclear Kesselring site in Saratoga County. So I'm deeply a part of that process. I'm one of the lead voices. I'm a ranking member on the subcommittee dealing with emerging threats, so cybersecurity issues fall under that committee. That will happen in June, and again, continuing to focus on trade. That will be the big priority as we move to the summer.
Again, that was Congresswoman Elise Stefanik speaking with WAMC's Pat Bradley. And that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. And when you donate to WAMC, you help us continue making stuff just like this. You can do it at WAMC.org. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.